Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, November 21st, 2018. South Sudanese Australians say they will elect leaders who can defend the image of South Sudan.
So if you look at the law and order argument now, it is talking on carjacking, it's talking on some of the petty crimes, and that sometimes affects the youth of our African origins or maybe South Sudanese.
And authorities in South Sudan tout oil fields to investors.
South Sudan has a lot of blocks that are empty. We have A1, A2, A3, A4, A5, A6 that are available. And there are other blocks that are not mapped yet. This is the place where you can invest. South Sudan is the place where you can invest.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese Australians are going to the polls this weekend, and some South Sudanese in Melbourne, Victoria, are hoping to elect a candidate who will defend the South Sudanese community in Australia. Jack Chencock, a journalist in Victoria, says South Sudanese are eager to send a message through the ballot box. He says the image of South Sudanese has been tainted by news reports and politicians who label South Sudanese as African gangs, and the community hopes to change that mentality.
If you remember last year, the Department of Home Affairs made a decision that the number of refugees intake from South Sudan was going to be reduced to zero. And the report just came out this year. There are no South Sudanese, Somalian and Iranian coming to Australia as refugees. And until further notice, but until now there's nothing. And also you look at the, a lot of reports have been made as well. The Minister of Home Affairs was quoted to have talk about Melbourne not being safe for African gangs. And that's the same thing now. The state Liberals took that into account. So if you look at the law and order argument now, it is talking on carjacking, it's talking on some of the petty crimes and how they should be sentenced. And that sometimes affects the youth of our African origins or maybe South Sudanese.
Let's take a step back. Where did the term African gangs come from? And how have the African immigrants reacted to that naming?
It was part of the news early this year, in December last year. The Africans don't like the word because they are African who are here now are part of multicultural Australia. And if you look at the reality of that, Australia, Africans are working harder and harder. And if the photo or the picture is painted to the point that the whole community is made up of this gang, then sometimes it doesn't make some people happy. Many media reportings have also painted this picture in a negative aspect of, way of explaining it to the community. And that have not gone well with the mainstream society. And also, it is creating fear within the community, whether the South Sudanese or the Africans or even the mainstream Australia, because when you use word gang, the negative things come into your mind, and that is where the problem is.
Well, it's going to be all eyes on Victoria, on Australia, as you go to the polls. Any last thoughts on Election Day for you?
Now, the good thing is that Australia is a democracy, is a very good democracy, whereby individuals have a choice to listen to the policies and also to vote wisely, that based on their interests, based on what they heard from the leaders, and that's where our role as a radio come in, because we We are a very impartial radio, very balanced information network. So, like, for example, as I speak, I will be doing a segment on the argument being made by the major parties. Ours is to give the information, and then it is up to individual to make their choice, to also vote wisely. And at the end of the day, Australia is a very nice country. A lot of South Sudanese are making a lot of progress, even though the news are outside there painting negative aspect of it.
That was Jack Deng Chenkok, who has done extensive reporting, speaking to South Sudanese in Australia. He was speaking to my colleague Ayen Deng Bior from Victoria. South Sudan is appealing to petroleum companies around the world to invest in its oil fields. Petroleum Minister Ezekiel Lolgat Kuot told a three-day oil and gas conference in Juba that the recent peace deal provides an opportunity for investors to get involved in the oil industry in South Sudan. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
Representatives of at least 400 oil, gas and energy companies started their conference last night in Juba. Gat Kuot appealed to them to invest in South Sudan's oil sector.
South Sudan is a place to invest, and we are open for investment. And that's why we are aggressively informing the whole world that the potentials are very high here in the Republic of South Sudan. NALPAT is there to team up with you, exchange information with NALPAT, and the government will be there supporting them, backing them, and all the partners who will be coming. We will be giving you the best service that you can have.
NILPET stands for Nile Petroleum Corporation. Gat Kuot says South Sudan is working to increase its oil production now that the peace deal has been finalized. He says his government is working with the oil companies to revive oil fields affected by fighting in the former unity state. The petroleum minister says investors should take advantage of unexploited oil blocks in the Upper Nile region.
South Sudan has a lot of blocks that are empty. We have B1 and B2. We have E1 and E2. They are also available. We have A1, A2, A3, A4, A5, A6. They are available. And there are other blocks that are not mapped yet. This is the place where you can invest. South Sudan is the place where you can invest.
Oil revenues contribute to 98% of South Sudan's economy. In 2011, the country produced 350,000 barrels of crude per day. But production has gone down since then due to insecurity in the oil fields. Gat Kuot says the September 12 peace agreement provides an opportunity for his country to boost its oil production.
For me, resumption is our number one priority. DPOC is producing 130,000 barrels a day. We want to go back to 270,000 barrels a day. GPOC is producing close to 20,000 barrels a day in Thomas South alone. By the 31st of December 2018, we must go back to what we used to produce, close to 90,000 barrels a day.
DPOC stands for Dara Petroleum Operating Company, and GPOC stands for Greater Pioneer Operating Company. South Sudan's first vice president, Taban Dengai, says his government is working to improve the country's business environment. Gai is calling on the petroleum ministry and oil companies to protect the environment in the oil fields. He says oil companies should address pollution in oil-producing areas and provide services to people living near the oil blocks.
So let us be mindful about the social corporate. Let us be mindful about the services to those communities. Let us be mindful about how to protect their environment.
This is the second time South Sudan is hosting an oil and gas conference in 2 years. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Yeah. Doctors and nurses at the Christian Memorial Hospital in Jonglei State have gone on strike over unpaid salaries. The hospital's administrator says he and 20 other health workers at the facility will report to work when their grievances are addressed. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Hundreds of patients seeking treatment are stuck at the Christian Memorial Hospital because doctors and nurses have locked doors to their wards, laboratory and doctors' rooms. The majority of the patients are children. Bola Yuen brought her 11-month-old son who has diarrhea. Speaking in Dinka, Yuen says she needs help.
It's bad that the hospital is closed. I came here to seek treatment for my child, and now there is no doctor. If there are people who are concerned with the welfare of the medical workers here, I appeal to them to please address the issue of the doctors so that they resume their work and help us.
Achol Deng brought in her 2-year-old daughter to seek treatment for an unknown illness. Speaking in Dinka, the mother of 7 says she often brings her children to Christian Memorial Hospital for treatment when they are sick.
There's something wrong now that this hospital is closed. When we go to the main Bor Hospital, we don't get all the treatment because the drugs are not enough. But whenever we come here, we get the drugs. Private clinics are too expensive for us.
Habra Maluk is a nurse at the Christian Memorial. He says will report to work when his salary for the past 2 months is paid in full.
The indefinite closure of Memorial Christian Hospital or the Memorial Christian Healthcare Center in Pokwau was closed as an indefinite closure because there was an agreement between UNICEF and Sudan Medical Care plus the MCH that the MCH staff had to be paid in RRFP while they have done 2 months without salaries. So this is the reaction from the staff that they need their salaries of 2 months and then they have to resume their works.
Christian Memorial Hospital was founded by some South Sudanese lost boys who now live in the United States. Dr. Ajangareng, the hospital chief medical officer, says the lost boys have been supplying the hospital with drugs, but the supplies have dwindled in recent months.
Due to the shortage of drugs and salary of staff, then this is what has led to the closure of the facility. We cannot tell when we are opening because we don't know when the drugs will be brought and when the salaries will come. If those things are not catered for, then we shall not open.
Monthly salaries at the hospital are $670 for a nurse and $700 for a doctor. The UN Children Agency, UNICEF, pays the salaries of the hospital staff through local medical charity, Sudan Medical Care, or SMC, which manages the facility. Emmanuel Lual is the head of the UNICEF in the Greater Jonglei area. Lual declined to comment on the strike, saying SMC is responsible for the hospital's welfare. Dr. Deng Mayom, the executive director of SMC, says the decision by doctors and nurses to close the hospital has affected services to vulnerable people in Jonglei State.
There were already ongoing discussion on what would happen, and I think a premature decision was made by the institution. It is unfortunate. But we will hold to what we have discussed with our partners and the instruction given by the ministry. And based on that is when we will act accordingly. Because running a project requires time and analysis.
Mayom is appealing to the medical workers to be patient as his office addresses their grievances. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at children affected by fighting in South Sudan. Stay tuned for that story.
do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Have you ever had to deal with a bully? What did you do?
When I was in lower primary, we had pupils who were bullies. They would offend you or try to attack you or provoke you or mock you. For personally, I ignored the bully. I just ignore them and they will stop.
I do just ignore. I see them as if they have not done anything to me. I've never responded to what they do. And sometimes you might look at it as if the person is just trying to talk to him or herself. That's how I've ever dealt with bullying in school.
Just ignore it. Ignore that person. That person so rash on you, you just take it easy. And yeah, just like that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. As the world marks Universal Children's Day this week, the UN's Children Agency is raising alarm over the fate of 13,000 children across South Sudan who are separated from their families by 5 years of conflict. The spokesperson for UNICEF in Juba says the agency is working with other humanitarian groups to reunite the children with their parents and relatives. For VOA News, Onan Walter Solomon reports from Juba.
10-year-old Abraham is dressed in a black T-shirt and a pair of jeans, looking happy and healthy. He is one of the 4 children UNICEF brought from Jonglei State in 2014 and handed to a local NGO that cares for street children in Juba called Confident Children Out of Conflict. Abraham says he was separated from his parents when fighting flared up between government and rebels forces led by Riek Machar in Jonglei State. He has few memories of his village and parents. He says he still remembers his father's first name, Ai.
I don't know where my parents. They were shooting guns. Then they took us. Then my mother did. My father is. I am lost. My father is looking for me. There's another man help us. Took us to his home. Then they get us in the bush. Then they pick us.
Conflict Children Out of Conflict supports 750 children who live in the community. 150 live within its compound and are enrolled in the Church Missionary Society School in Juba. The NGO's executive director, Helen Boro, describes the conditions that must be met for a child to be accepted at their center.
We have child-friendly space, activities in the community, because if those kind of kids appear within this setting, then we would take responsibility. Schools normally will not take children without guardians or parents, because really you need to give your full name when you are registering and who is going to take responsibility, not only about school fees really, but also the day-to-day school attendance. Supposing this child doesn't actually come to school, how do you trace the child? Whom do you talk to? This behavior do happen.
John Wani Aliseo is the headmaster of St. Joseph's Primary School. He says even if a child can afford fees and other requirements, his school will not accept children who have no parental guidance.
Those who are separated by conflict, they will not get chance to come and to the school here unless somebody bring them. We cannot take responsibility of a child coming from outside without knowing from where is this child coming from, who is responsible, and how is this child grown up. You register somebody who will at the end bring problems to your end.
James Aldworth is UNICEF's communication specialist in South Sudan. He says UNICEF has registered about 18,000 children who are separated, unaccompanied, or missing since 2013.
We have reunited approximately 6,000 of those. So there is about 12,000, that we estimate, that remain separated. We register children in different places, be in Malakal, maybe in Bentu, but also a lot here. Like there's separated children also in the POCs, for example, which are being managed by UNMISS. And we work with different partners in different areas, depending on the location.
Both UNICEF and Confident Children Out of Conflict officials say some of the children separated from their parents due to the fighting are living on the streets in various towns across South Sudan. They say they hope their efforts will reduce the numbers of children who lack access to schooling and other support. For VOA News, I am Onen Walter Solomon in Juba.
Millions of women across sub-Saharan Africa are still living in a complicated relationship of polygamy, a practice that was once prevalent among African men. A panel of judges in the neighboring Uganda recently rejected a petition to have polygamy declared unconstitutional in the country. According to the UN, polygamy was either legal or considered acceptable in 33 countries with majority in Africa. Activists like Hola Al-Karib, regional director of the Strategic Initiative for Women Horn of Africa, is urging governments to enact laws that protect women's dignity. Karib tells Carol Van Damme the practice often increases the risk of disease and poverty.
It has always been perceived, you know, as a cultural practice, and it's been perceived, you know, as a religious practice and so on, you know, for Muslim community in Eastern Africa, and a cultural practice for majority of communities in Eastern Africa. Millions and millions of children were raised, you know, without direct engagements of their father figures, and women have been overburdened, you know, for generation after generation. The fact that they have to share their lives, you know, until they die with co-wives, you know, and all the trauma.
It puts women, it sort of boxes women in, and girls too, really, who are forced to marry at a young age. But why does it seem to persist when they know?
Absolutely.
Why does it seem to persist, though, when they know that it's not good for their families? If they know that it's going to hurt their families in the long run, why do they keep doing it?
Well, the fact is, you know, when, you know, men, they do it because they can do it, you know, because there is no accountability. Our legal system up to date, you know, we don't enforce, you know, child maintenance, for example. A man could have wives in different parts of the countries, in different villages, and could have children, you know, from so many wives. And yet, you know, we don't enforce child maintenance. We don't enforce maintenance for wives. So this is one thing. There is no accountability. It can be done easily. It's part of an ancient and, you know, culture and tradition, and it's acceptable. We live in patriarchal societies. But the bottom line is polygamy has very serious ramifications, you know, in the future of this part of the world, you know, of Eastern Africa and of the Horn of Africa, in terms of, you know, women's sexual and reproductive health, in terms of the emotional well-being of women and their children, the level of trauma, the status of abandonment, the abuse and the poverty that families have to live through because of polygamy. And yet, you know, it's being perceived as a form of gender-based violence.
According to the United Nations, which obviously opposes the practice, polygamy was legal or generally accepted in some 33 countries, 25 of which are in Africa. Which would you say are the countries where it's most prevalent in Africa?
We don't have statistics, but it's a common practice. It's accepted, unfortunately. You know, it's accepted even among the educated class. And actually, you know, many, like couples for many, you know, they think that as long as they can actually support more than one family, you know, why not doing it? The fact that a male provider could commit to more than one family, let alone, you know, the emotional distress, you know, on the women and their children. And I have talked to many men who were actually raised in polygamy institutions, and they speak about the trauma and the suffering and the fact that they never had their fathers present fully in their life. And so it's a form of violence.
That's Hala Karib, the regional director of the Strategic Initiative for Women, Horn of Africa. She was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Damme from Khartoum. Tomorrow, Hala talks about what it is like to fight the century-old culture of polygamy in East Africa. Several gunmen shot five people and kidnapped an Italian aid worker in Kenya today. Witnesses say at least three children were injured in the attack in a business area in Kilifi County on the coast. The men snatched 23-year-old Sylvia Costanza Romana, who was in Kenya, a volunteer for an Italian group. Reporter Rahel Ombor and cameraman Amos Wanga went to the scene for VOA shortly after the attack. Rahel has this report for us.
A group of unidentified gunmen, four in number, abducted an Italian woman working for an aid organization in Kenya. The abduction happened in Chakama village in the southeast of Kenya, Malindi district. Five people, including three children, were wounded and taken to hospital. The reason for the attack and the identity of the attackers has not yet been established. The organization the Italian volunteer was working for posted a short statement on its website saying there were no words to comment on what was happening. According to an eyewitness who also happens to be the village chief, Albert Chome, the attack at the village in Malindi district happened at around 7:30 p.m. Chome says the attackers were four in number and one of them had actually lived in the community there for 3 days before the attack. He had rented a house at the town, Chamaka Guest House. Chome says the gunman walked in and slapped the Italian volunteer, who at some time was trying to resist. They then picked her up and fled with her on foot. There are no whereabouts on the Italian woman who was abducted, but police say they're in pursuit of the abductors. The area the abduction took place, Chakama, neighbors River Sabaki, and locals believe that the abductees must have crossed the river into neighboring town known as Kararacha, which neighbors Tana River and Garissa counties that share a common border with Somalia. So far, no one has claimed the attack. The last time such an attack happened in the area is 10 years ago, so residents and locals are still baffled at this latest incident. Malindi is in the coast of Kenya, and tourism is the major economic activity earner in the region. Locals are saying that if this incident is not handled well, it may have a negative impact on the area, at least economically.
That was journalist Rahel Ombor, who has just come from the scene in Kenya's Kilifi County, where gunmen shot at least five people, including children, and kidnapped an Italian aid worker. That's the end of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Amber by Laksin Benjamin.
Amba ye, amba ye ye, amba ye ye, patilipa.
Amba ye ye, amba ye ye, amba ye ye, patilipa.
Ngira na sodomogo, ngira na sodomogo, ngira na sodomogo, beli bibilo gandara.
Amba ye ye, amba ye ye, amba ye ye, patilipa.
Ngira na kekeli, ngira na kekeli, beti kasreketi.
Amba ye ye, amba ye ye. Amba ye ye patilipa.
Ngirana rutongo, ngirana rutongo, ngirana rutongo kubona amba.
Amba ye ye, amba ye ye, amba ye ye patilipa.
Ngalaga kuden amba bero, ku amba longodi kiko, ngajikine bindo lenga beri. Ngirola suda beti manyan, kote bakana. Patile palo le kike dingi ki kabikururunga nyo amba doti kina ngaji kina lenga be
amba ye amba ye ye amba ye ye patilipa
amba ye ye amba ye ye amba ye ye patilipa
ngira na sodomogo ngira na sodomogo ngira na sodomogo beli bibilo gandara
amba ye ye amba ye ye amba ye ye patilipa
ngira na kekeli ngira na kekeli beti kasreketi
amba ye ye amba ye ye amba ye ye patilipa
ngira na rudongo ngira na rudongo ngira na rudongo kubona amba
amba ye.
We've been listening to Laksin Benjamin with the song Amba. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.